The Steady State Sentinels, produced by the Steady State, a community of former national security professionals who spent their careers safeguarding the United States at home and abroad.
Today, we continue that mission by staying true to our oaths to defend the Constitution,
uphold our democracy,
and protect our nation's security. Join our expert hosts as they interview field-tested guests whose unique experiences shed light on the crises and challenges facing our nation.
Welcome to the Steady State Sentinel. I'm Lauren Anderson, joined by Jim Lawler, Peter Mina, and John Cipher. We're launching this podcast at a time when our democracy faces real threats. The guardrails we trusted are eroding, respect for the rule of law is slipping, and too many of our leaders are no longer accountable to the people they serve. We've spent our careers defending those guardrails both at home and around the world. We've seen what healthy democracies look like, and we've seen the warning signs when they begin to decline. That's why we're beginning with January 6th, where we were, what we thought, and why that day still matters. We also know people experienced that day in different ways. Some were horrified, others were confused. Some supported the protest but rejected the violence, and some remain unsure what to believe. This space is for all of you. Our goal is to speak objectively and factually about the trends that accelerate democratic decline. We see it in executive overreach, the manipulation of national security, attacks on our institutions, and the erosion of public trust. We'll talk about what all this means, not just for the Constitution and the rule of law, but for your life and your community. We want this to be a conversation. Your questions, concerns, and ideas will shape future episodes. Whether you agree with us or not, your voice has a place here. Democracy thrives when people stay informed, engaged, and willing to talk with one another, even when it's hard. Today, we'll start by introducing ourselves, who we are, why we're here, and why January 6th was a turning point for each of us. We're glad you're with us. And Jim, would you like to lead off?
Thank you, Lauren. I'm Jim Lawler. For 25 years, I was an operations officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. And on January the 19th, 1980, I swore an oath to the Constitution, and I've upheld that oath for the last 45 years. And I was very, very proud of the fact that my fellow CIA officers and FBI special agents have done the same. And I'm very troubled today as to what I'm seeing, as Lauren put it, the erosion of our democratic institutions. On January the 6th, the thing that struck me was I had been in a bad accident a few days earlier, and I was bedridden. And I was watching with horror unfold the storming of the Capitol, something that has not happened, in at least not in my lifetime. And I watched this, and I felt kind of like the actor Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window watching horror unfold, and he could do nothing about it. And I was motivated to participate in this program, this Steady State Sentinel program, because of a few lines that I remembered from the famous German pastor Martin Niemöller, who said, "First they came for the socialists," and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. "Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. And then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I'm not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." And I'm very, very concerned about that. And so when I was asked to help host these programs, I thought we need to take a steady stand with a steady state and speak out.
Well, Jim, a lot of what you said just resonates so much with me. And for everyone, my name is Peter Mina. I spent 14 years at the Department of Homeland Security, including six running the labor and employment law program at ICE, and then another 6 years at DHS's Office for Civil Rights and Civil Liberties, including running the office for about a 6 month period through inauguration and the transition. And January 6th was a very strange time for me. I was at the Office for Civil Rights and Civil Liberties. We were in the throes of the pandemic. I was sitting at home on my computer, watching, almost feeling, you know, somewhat helpless, watching the news and hearing what was going on, and being at the department, you know, you were getting sort of these updates about what was happening in real time. And it was horrifying. And, you know, particularly at a civil rights office, you know, there was real concern about what this meant, not just for the people, unfortunately, at the Capitol and that were facing real harm, but what it meant for the country and what it meant for us as an office that was trying to make sure that civil rights and civil liberties were protected at a department that's now, you know, squarely front and center as to what the government is doing. And so for me, the other kind of inflection point and why I'm here and why I'm a member of the Steady State was March 21st of this year, which is when the department and the administration announced that my office, the Office for Civil Rights and Civil Liberties, was going to be eliminated. And at that point, and it's something that I had been, you know, thinking about for some time, you know, I just decided that, look, this isn't consistent with my values. It's not consistent with why I chose to serve, as I'm sure it wouldn't be for all of you. And for many of the folks that are listening that have gone through, you know, similar horrors at their federal workplaces or even elsewhere. And so I think it also, in a real hurry, makes you really clear on what your values are and what matters most. And honestly, what doesn't matter much at all. And so with that, I felt I couldn't be a spectator anymore. I had to go out and do something. I had to stand up for people that were too afraid to do it themselves. And so I, you know, just decided it was time to find another way to serve. And so this is the way I've chosen to serve.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Jim. My name is John Cypher. I spent 28 years in the clandestine service of the Central Intelligence Agency, serving at lots of places around the world. And I loved and I'm proud of my service. And I believe that our institutions are gems that the public would be really proud of if they knew the work that those people did every day. And frankly, January 6th, but also even more than that, I'm upset about how those public institutions are being undermined for petty and partisan reasons. And I've seen what happens in other countries when authoritarian governments take over, or that when their public servants are denigrated. And I also believe that those of us who served have an obligation to help educate the public to what we do. And so as such, I'm proud to be part of the Steady State as well. Thanks.
And I'm Lauren Anderson again. Like Jim, like Peter and John, I took an oath 41 years ago, and it still resonates with me today. I spent 29 years with the FBI, working both in the United States as well as abroad in Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. Very strong background in counterintelligence and counterterrorism, running the Joint Terrorism Task Force in New York, and I loved it. I loved every minute of that career. And after leaving the FBI, I focused on trying to find a way to continue giving. And one of the ways I've done that and continued serving is as an advisor to our U.S. Comptroller General at the Government Accountability Office, which is the real DOGE. It is the real institution that's been around for more than 100 years to focus on fraud, waste, and abuse and mismanagement within the government. And they do an extraordinary job. And I can remember January 6th so clearly because I was literally on a Zoom call with two colleagues who are in an international organization with me, and they were seeking my guidance on how we might balance the competing views in the organization post the election, because I was lucky enough to be somebody who could move readily among all the different constituent groups. And at the same time, I was literally preparing
for a presentation as a guest lecturer at NYU in their master's program in international affairs on domestic terrorism. And so literally to know I would be walking into a virtual classroom with students from all over the globe just 2 weeks later struck me in an extraordinary way. And it drove it home for me. And I felt so strongly that I wanted to keep continued giving, which I have. But I have to agree with Peter that earlier this year, things also changed in a more significant way for me personally, as I watched enormous changes going on within the FBI, an institution I love, and people that I care deeply about who were being removed for doing their jobs and no other reason. I've watched leader after leader dismissed because they wouldn't play along with the political game. And in one instance, a friend of mine who was heading the Salt Lake City office was dismissed 2 weeks before Charlie Kirk was assassinated, and absolutely zero reason. And so for me, I can't, like everyone else in this group, I can't sit by and watch this. I am compelled to do what I can. And if it's my voice that I can use in helping to share experiences and encourage everybody to talk, not only the four of us, but all of the people that we'll be speaking with on the podcast, then that's a great thing, because I'm a big believer in bringing everyone in. And the more we can get from people who have disparate viewpoints, the better, because hopefully that starts a dialogue for all of us.
Lauren, I feel like I could just say ditto. I think that for me, you know, it makes me really think about why I want to be part of this podcast. And I think that I am fortunate enough to have an opportunity to really talk about the intersection of national security with civil rights and civil liberties, which couldn't be more important than right now. And I see it every single day. And to your point about working, you know, with the GAO or the Government Accountability Office, you know, I, as part of oversight, that also is, I feel like part of my responsibility now as a private citizen to try and really illustrate what the guardrails should be. And that these two concepts of protecting people's rights and liberties and securing our nation are not mutually exclusive. They rely on each other. And I also think that we have a very profound responsibility as people that have been in the government, in the national security enterprise, to use this platform to really make what's happening in Washington real for the person in Nebraska or in El Paso, Texas, or in Chicago. And, you know, more and more of this is this effort by the administration is coming to people's doorsteps. And, you know, I think that it is up to us to really show folks that this isn't some abstract idea in Washington. It affects each one of us every single day in profound ways. And if we don't use our voices, the outcome is not going to be good, not just for you and I, but for us as a nation.
Thanks for that. You know, like Jim, I worked in the clandestine service, in the secret side of the CIA, running and recruiting spies overseas. And I remember one time when we had one new director, General Hayden, he spoke about the obligation. If you work in a secret organization for the U.S. government, the U.S. government is often uncomfortable. American citizens are often uncomfortable with secrecy and what that means. And so his point was that the leadership of the organization, and as you retire and go out, we have an obligation to the public to try to explain what it is we do, how we do it, and why we do it. Certainly, we need to protect serious secrets, but we also have an obligation to the public. And since I retired, I've taken that seriously. I've written for a lot of op-ed pieces for the New York Times, Washington Post, Atlantic, and other places. I speak on podcasts, on television when it makes sense, oftentimes about Russia and what I learned about from working there. But I also agree with Jim, Lauren, and Peter that, you know, what we're seeing now is an attack on some of those First Amendment rights, an attack on what public servants are doing, and an attack on giving the public real information. So we're trying to put out what we learned in our experience, either throughout the government or around the world, to try to let people know what's important to us so that people can sift that and make their own decisions on things. So I think the Steady State podcast is going to be a place where we bring in a lot of different voices to talk about their experiences. And I think the common denominator is going to be what we believe is country over party. I think we're all patriots. We all care about this country very strongly. And there's different ways to do that. And I think that's the kind of thing we're going to talk about on the podcast.
Building on John's comments just now, I have a feeling he shares with me the fact that prior to the election in 2016, the first Trump election, I never knew, nor did I care, what the political affiliation of any of my colleagues was. I never knew. I didn't care. And I'll be totally candid. I am, or was, past tense, a moderate Republican. I'm not sure that those exist anymore. I hate to say that. But back then, prior to the 2016 election, I didn't know. We didn't wear political buttons. We weren't working for one political party or another. We were working for the United States and our national security. And that's what we want to convey on this podcast of the Steady State Sentinel, that what we do matters for our national security. And we hate to see the corrosion, the destruction of what we defended, what we went out and did for so many years. One thing I'd like to ask John, quite frankly, I've known John for over 25 years, maybe 30 years. It goes back a ways.
We're both old.
Right. John is one of the best operations officers I've ever known in the Central Intelligence Agency. John served overseas under extremely difficult conditions, and he did it for the United States. And yet, I believe I'm right in this. I think he had his clearances stripped. And that is disgraceful. He had his clearances stripped because people think he's part of a deep state, something that doesn't exist. And I just was horrified when I saw John's name on this list of people. I mean, I thought, what's next? A list of people being sent to Guantanamo? To be quite honest with you, when I saw John's name on the list, I thought, well, damn, maybe they should put my name on the list.
Soon enough, Jim, soon enough.
Right.
Just a quick follow-up on that. Yeah, there was a group of CIA officers who signed a letter before the 2020 election warning that the Russians are likely to try to interfere in our elections like they did in 2016. And that became pushed for partisan reasons by the other side. And when Trump was elected this time, he put all of us in a presidential order on the day he came into power that stripped our clearances. Now, frankly, one of the things I think we're going to find as we talk about what's happening now is issues related to corruption and incompetence. Those of us who worked in the government, we took our job very seriously. We tried to be competent. We tried to work on behalf of the American people. Whereas I see from this administration, there's incompetence. And one of the incompetent thing is I had my security clearances stripped, but I didn't have any security clearances. I hadn't been working in the secret sector for a number of years. So I think they did something quite nasty to me, but it didn't matter. But that goes to incompetence. But the corruption part of it is to attack people for exercising their First Amendment rights and to get wrong what they claimed that we had done.
I'd like to jump in and echo that too, because one of the things that I always heard overseas is that our counterparts, whether it was in Europe, Africa, or the Middle East, always marveled at the fact that our institutions were largely not confronted with dealing with politicizing the work. We were able to do our work, and that was something that people said over and over to me is, how great is it to work in a country and for an organization where the politics don't matter? And one point where I saw that really clearly in the FBI is that whatever people say on the campaign trail, what I found during the decades I was in the Bureau is that when we put together the national security briefings for the incoming president, whoever he was, whichever party he was from, we prepared those briefing materials. The incoming president and his team were briefed. And remarkably, no matter what they said on that campaign trail, once they understood the state of things in national security, they went remarkably down a centrist line. The politics that might have been present during the campaign were no longer there, because the reality was national security was something that everyone got behind. There could be differences in domestic policy, But when it came to this, there was remarkable commonality. And just to speak a little bit, John, on your thread on corruption, I agree with what you said. And in a real sense, it's happening too, because this administration has made the decision to not enforce, to stop enforcement of laws that are currently on the books that have to do with bribery with foreign officials. They have dismantled many of the FBI's white-collar crime squads, in particular the corruption squads. They've diverted resources to working with ICE rather than working on national security matters. And that's a politicization of the FBI that has not been there in 50 years and doesn't belong there. And that is making all of us less safe. And it goes further to the corruption piece that is there and I think going to continue on with us.
Yeah, to add to that, Lauren, with the FBI, they're also diminishing the counterintelligence and counterespionage part of the FBI. So defending us against those countries, those enemies abroad who want to do damage to the United States, whether they be Iranians, Russians, Chinese, or what have you, the FBI's counterintelligence mission is front and center in trying to stop that kind of either espionage, disinformation, subversion, what have you. And so they're breaking down barriers inside against corruption and fraud, but also in terms of what external actors are up to.
So I'm not quite the counterintelligence expert that Lauren is, but for those 25 years that I was at the CIA, my job was to recruit spies, foreign spies. And I can tell you right now that not once in my 25 years did I ever recruit a happy person. I only recruited stressed out people. And by firing a lot of national security officials with secrets that protect us, protect our Constitution, protect our country, we have created a horrible nightmare on the counterintelligence side. I'm sure that the Chinese, the Russians, the Iranians, and all of our adversaries are gleeful watching this, that it's a target-rich environment. And I don't want to cast suspicions on any of my colleagues that got let off, but I'm telling you, this is not the way to run a country.
No, and I know, Peter, if I just jump in for one second, I know you have thoughts too. But to echo that, Jim, what's really important for people to understand is, yes, we've created essentially a hunting ground, but what's more insidious is that some of our adversaries, in particular China and Russia, have been very adept at using LinkedIn and other platforms that people think are largely safe as a means of recruiting people. And it's not immediately evident to any of these people who might be looking for jobs that they could be dealing with an actor representing the Chinese government or the Russian government. So I think part of what we can each do, not necessarily, but possibly through the podcast and outside, is to share with our colleagues who've lost their jobs and make them super aware of the fact that that risk is out there in a very subtle way as well as a very overt way.
And I think for me, you know, obviously I did not have the honor of serving in the same way the three of you did as operators in the national security space. However, you know, I stood side by side with those operators and I considered myself as well as my colleagues, you know, national security professionals. And I think about intelligence gathering and the idea of, you know, looking at intelligence products and considering, you know, foreign malign influence and how that intersects with First Amendment protected activity. And I think about what's happening right now, and I see not only the near-term effects of what's happening, but also a weakening of our national security enterprise, because we are now discouraging people that would otherwise raise their hand to serve because they don't want to be part of this. And I also feel, you know, very strongly, and I've chosen, in addition to doing this podcast and trying to speak out where I can, you know, I've chosen to go back into private practice and advocate for federal employees and take on civil rights litigation. And it stuns me that it seems like the only law that matters in this current moment is the Immigration and Nationality Act. And unfortunately, all of the wonderful, proud, dedicated law enforcement officers in the federal government and national security professionals in the IC and other places, are sworn to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the United States, not just a law. And as someone who, you know, has seen people's, you know, rights and liberties get trampled on in the employment context as well as in the public sphere, it just goes against everything I stand for. And it is really hard to watch.
Thanks for that. Peter, just to mention, I want to stress what you guys have all mentioned, especially Jim, is from my experience in professional service in the government, is it was apolitical work. We were hired for professional skills. We were trained for those skills. We operated on behalf of the American people. But same thing, I worked for almost 30 years with people around the world, in and out, long days, and all kinds of crazy situations. And we never discussed partisan politics. We never discussed who supports who, you know, which party, which candidate, any of that type of thing, because we worked for the American people. And as different administrations come and go, they would change policies. They might change some things, but they didn't ask us to operate on behalf of a single person or a single partisan policy. It was more, you're working for the American people. And I think what's happened is leadership now, for their own partisan reasons, have spread this, frankly, lie that people who work inside the government are some kind of deep state who are working on behalf of one party or another. So in their views, they're, you know, if they're not part of one party, they're an enemy to the other party. And that's simply not our experience. And I think that's the thing we're going to want to talk about on this podcast. So some of the people that I've started to interview are people who are in that vein that talk about country over party. For example, I'm interviewing Adam Kinzinger. So Adam Kinzinger was a Republican politician in the Congress. He then served loyally on the January 6th commission. He and Liz Cheney were the only two Republicans on the committee. He did yeoman's work. And so I think we're going to talk to him about his experience and why he, you know, why as a Republican, he was pushed out of the party and pushed out of Congress. I'm going to talk to some former military generals and others. I've talked to Terry Virts, who's a former fighter pilot and astronaut who's running for Congress in Texas. And I think we're all going to be talking to people, and I think you're going to find a common thread here that people believe that working on behalf of the country in an apolitical way is something that's probably better for us than this version that we're all enemies of each other here in America.
And John, I feel that very personally. In October, right before the election, not just at the Department of Homeland Security or involving the Department of Homeland Security, but as I understand it, at other federal agencies, watch list websites started to pop up, you know, identifying career civil servants as people that might be opposed to the incoming administration. And, you know, I had the honor or privilege, however you want to look at it, of being on the DHS watch list, basically for doing my job. And, you know, fine, I was a senior executive, you know, I was out there in the public domain. Still not fair, but I get it. What I don't get, though, is your, you know, GS-12, GS-13 staff person who doesn't ask for any of this. And instead, they're being targeted. And you can imagine the things that are being said on social media and elsewhere. And what has now become, you know, very real physical threats. I had to contact my police department about anti-swatting. I had to talk to my kid's school. Hey, heads up, this is happening, just in case. And no one should ever fear for their safety, for doing their job and serving the American people. And I think what this also drives home for me every time I think about it is, this is not a time to be a spectator. We all have a responsibility to do something. That could be as simple as having a conversation with your neighbor about what's going on and trying to explain, you know, what might be a kind of a obscure or obtuse concept. You know, hey, why does this affect me? You know, why does what's happening, you know, either somewhere around the world or somewhere in DC, why does that matter? And doing it in a way that people can understand and appreciate, rather than, you know, and we've all heard it our whole careers, you know, rather than using DC speak, And I say it as a lawyer, like, or sounding like a lawyer. So I think that, you know, again, we have a real responsibility, but it's not just the four of us. It's every single person out there.
And I agree. I'd like to jump in. We haven't really touched on it, but when we think of our future guests, things that we want to talk about, something that is important to all of us and the entire government are the relationships that we have with our partners, whether it's our what is referred to as the Five Eye Alliances, which is Canada, New Zealand, Australia, the United Kingdom, and the U.S., and our allies well beyond that. And they also have an important perspective because they are a part of this national security game with us, and their view is important. You know, one of the most important things I learned when I was first overseas is when the U.S. invaded Iraq, both Canada and France, and I was living in France, were really opposed to the decision by the United States. And I was particularly concerned that it was going to impact the liaison relationship. And the French, my French counterpart said, that's politics. Don't worry about it. We have a mission to do. We stay focused on that. Let the politicians do what they want. So I think that we also, it's important for us to share with our audience that our allies in countries around the world also are a part of our national security apparatus. And we will, from time to time, be bringing them in as well to share their perspective from as they sit looking outside the United States into it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think our partners, our allies around the world are something special that the United States has because those people have learned that the United States plays a special role in the world. And I think we here all take that very seriously, and we're worried about that being shredded. So I'm proud to be part of this team, one of the hosts. And I think we're going to interview some very interesting people, and we're going to talk to them about, you know, their experiences, and hopefully we can educate the public a little bit and turn down the angriness that we see on social media and other places.
Yeah, John, just piggybacking on that, you know, in addition to looking, you know, externally around the world, I want to look right in my neighborhood. You know, I feel like one of my important responsibilities when I was in government was really being a receiver of public concern and public objection and impact to the Department of Homeland Security's policies, procedures, you know, activities. And I feel like my role on this podcast is going to be in part to tap into that voice of the people, to tap into communities who may be targeted by what the administration is doing. And again, showing why that's not somebody over there, but it's us. It is part of that impact on the social compact that we all subscribe to as citizens. And then again, just also talking about that intersection of national security, civil rights, and civil liberties. And it's just an honor to do this with all of you.
And I want to echo that. We are so looking forward to collaborating together. Some of us knew each other before, others didn't, and we're really looking forward to having robust conversations with our guests and with you. We do want to hear from you. You are important to this conversation. This is not about the four of us sitting in a room somewhere and talking to people that share our experiences. We want everyone to be a part of this, and I am honored to be sitting here with three amazing guys, and I think we've got a great number of podcasts coming up, and we're looking forward to the future with all of you.
One of those podcasts that Lauren just mentioned will be my interview with our director of the Steady State, Steve Cash. I've known Steve for more than 25 years, a distinguished attorney, a distinguished civil servant. He actually worked with me at the Central Intelligence Agency as an operations officer, and is going to explain why more than 360 senior members of the national security organizations in the United States are so concerned that they've joined the Steady State. So please join us in our future podcasts. Again, this is John Cypher, Peter Mina, and Lauren Anderson, and I'm Jim Lawler, the Steady State Sentinel, still standing watch.
Thank you for listening to the Steady State Sentinel podcast. Don't miss out on more insights and exposés from America's premier global security experts.
Also, subscribe to our Substack at substack.com/@steadystate1 and follow our social media And join us right here next week for another exciting edition.
The Steady State is a nonprofit organization working to sustain our democracy and national security.
Join us and support our mission by visiting www.thesteadystate.org.